Line up your burp with that burp. Go.
Glad we said burp, not laugh. Can't use that.
Okay, here's what my profound thought was.
Okay.
And actually, you know what? Let me say this live so I can get your honest opinions from it. And I think, Scott, that'll lead into what you're talking about, which can very easily lead into what Dave's talking about.
All right.
I'm just going to sit here smiling.
Let's go for it.
I like that. Brad, I appreciated that Rube Goldberg conversation description. Then that'll trip Chris's insecurities about his feet, which will lead to a conversation about Scott's inability to tie his shoes, which will then lead back to webcom.
Oh, good morning. It's time for another amazingly, informatively bad episode of Webcomics Weekly. I am one of your hosts, Scott Richard Kurtz, and you can hear about me over at pvponline.com. Who else is with me in the room?
Well, Scott, my name is David Kellett, and I do a little strip called Sheldon at sheldoncomics.com. And actually, now I should mention I also do this sci-fi thing called Drive, which will soon be at drivecomic.com, but is not
nice.
Good work, David. My name is Christopher Straub. I do two comics, Star Slip and Chainsaw Suit, and I also do Blamimations with you, Scott. I'm surprised you forgot about that.
I keep forgetting to mention that.
It's not really a webcomic. That's why. It doesn't have a place here.
Unfortunately, it's more famous than our webcomics.
And I'm Brad Geiger. I do a comic called Evil Incorporated at evil-comic.com. I'm also the editor at webcomics.com. And as a matter of fact, guys, this was something I was thinking about posting on webcomics.com. But I want to share it here with you guys and see what you think about it, because it's something that hit me last night as I was typing out yet another one of these responses to somebody who's doing a college paper on webcomics, and they were asking all the usual questions, and I was giving them all the usual answers, and all of a sudden something hit me, and it never hit me before. And so I want to share it with you guys and see.
You should report that, Brad. She's not supposed to treat you that way.
and you shouldn't call her it. That's not really nice. Yeah.
It's called domestic abuse, Brad, and you don't have to stand for it. She's a formidable woman. But that doesn't.
Yeah, believe me. And I can't say anything about that because, as you can probably hear in the background, I've got my two sons in the studio with me, and they're watching Alvin and the Chipmunks and behaving very nicely. So I can't say anything about the formidableness or otherwise of their mother.
Well, Brad, what I thought you were going to say is that I can't say anything about that because she's hitting me right now.
I can't say anything because these little bastards will report it back to her.
They're like little brown-shirted thugs.
Because they know what side their bread is buttered on.
Guys, I'm trapped in my own home. In the calmest possible voice, Brad's like, guys, help me. Help me, please. Guys, help me.
Call the police.
Well, the only abuse Brad is getting is the fact that we won't let him get to his place. So go ahead, Brad.
Well, here it is. The question was, do you think the webcomic as a full-time job is growing venue for the devoted cartoonist, or do you feel it's plateauing industry left to those already established or hobbyists? And so I start typing out the usual, you know, hey, I think webcomics offers a cartoonist the best opportunity for full-time employment, and then it hits me. And I started typing just off the top of my head. Here's the part that a lot of people misunderstand, though. Doing a cartoon or a comic strip or a single panel gag comic, it's incredibly, incredibly difficult. And there are no more people who are succeeding at webcomics in 2010 than there were people succeeding at newspaper comics in 1983, for example. I think if you took it and compared the numbers of the people who were trying and the people who succeeded at getting full-time employment, I think the numbers would be very, very similar, because what we're talking about here is doing a comic strip, for example. You've got to be able to come up with an idea and be able to illustrate that idea and execute it in a competent way, not once, but several times a week, every year, for the rest of your career. And at the end of the year, you get to do it again all over again next year. In other words, it's a Herculean task. There's a very, very few people who are able to do this. And the only difference between now and 1983, and the only difference between now and 1983, when syndicated comics in newspapers would have been the ruling way of getting your full-time position, the only difference is transparency. In other words, the only people that really knew about how many people were trying and how many people were failing in 1983 would have been people like John Glenn at Universal UCLIC. He would have seen all the submissions. He would have seen all the failures, and he would have seen how very, very few people get selected. And then of those people who got selected, how many people were actually able to make the transition to doing it full time? In other words, that wasn't an immediate thing. You had to pick up newspapers. You had to, just like we're doing, you had to work to succeed. The only difference is now you've got transparency. Now we can see all of the, for lack of a better word, wannabes. Now we can see everyone who's out there and failing, and we can and it seems to me, or it, not me, it seems to the average Joe on the street, gee, there's a lot of people trying and a lot of people failing. There must be something wrong with this system, because in 1983, your average Joe, he only saw professional cartoonists. He didn't see anybody who was trying and failing unless it was the kid across the street. And there was there was a fence you had to jump over. You had to make 9-week submission. You had to mail it off. You had to wait to find out. Today, all you need is a modem, and that's almost standard issue when the baby comes out at the nursery, okay?
Yeah.
So the only difference between 1983 and now is transparency. We can see all the people that are failing, and it seems as if there ought to be more success. But the success rate is the same, and that's because this is a highly, highly difficult thing to succeed at. And and that goes across for Marvel Comics. You never saw the people making submissions to Marvel or DC. It goes all across what we talk about here: graphic novels, comic strips, single panels, magazine cartoons. It's incredibly difficult. The only difference is that we have transparency today, and. And we've all been doing this for over a decade apiece. Have you ever thought of it that way? That's never occurred to me.
No.
No, I think about it all the time, actually. I tell people all the time when one of the criticisms waylaid against webcomics is you have to wade through 1,000 crappy comics before you find one good one. And that's because the people that are normally would be learning how to make their comics privately are learning how to make their comics publicly now.
Right. They're failing publicly, yeah.
Well, they're not failing. They're just learning. They're not trying.
Well,
I mean,
yeah, no,
when,
but I mean,
when
in,
I was...
In any particular instance of you reading it, you would see it as,
sure,
this is no good. You know, that.
But I mean, one of the only good things that Facebook's done for me is I've connected with some people from my old life in West Des Moines, Iowa, when I was in junior high, and a group of kids that we made our own comic book company, and we assigned each other jobs, and one guy was the writer, one guy was the publisher, one guy was the artist, and we made a bunch of comics. None of them passed 3 pages and a cover, but we made our own comics. And we made our own comic book company. And when you look back on it, it's cute, and maybe someone who likes PvP would like to see that stuff. But if we had been in junior high now, that would have all been on the web. We would have taken ourselves very seriously on the web.
Right.
Publicly. And because we took ourselves very seriously then. We went home and told our parents we were starting our own comic book company. And the context of that was our parents smiled and thought it was cute. But the context of it when you put it online is someone looks at it and goes, oh, this is webcomics? Great. But yeah, I mean, every conversation that we ever have with anyone that wants to make a living at webcomics, every time we make a post about giving advice, it's understood, or it should be understood, that it's starting off with, if you're talented enough, if you're one of the talented people, you know, then here's some advice for you. Because if you're not, then the only advice is get better.
Right. Oh, well, you know what? Well, actually, somebody that was a Formspring question that somebody asked me. They said, you know, isn't it a shame that you give this advice to people who want to make a living at this, but what if they're not capable of taking advantage of that advice? And they said, isn't that a waste of time? And I said, it's not a waste of time, because as long as the advice is still getting to the people who can use it, then anybody else is also welcome to listen to it. I don't know that it's a waste of time to put it out there, but it's true that it's not going to be – it's not something that everyone gets to do, which we've said over and over.
Right, right. I you know, I've often thought that if you look at the numbers, because, Brad, this goes back to your original point, there are less people even right now working as professional cartoonists. And I'm not talking about mixed professions of illustrator, cartoonist, and, you know, illustrator, editorial, anything like that. I'm talking straight cartoonists. There are less people working as professional cartoonists than there are in the NBA. And we've said that sort of thing before, right? And but the thing is, if you look at every aspirational college student that's really, really good at basketball, not just the kind of guys you'd see playing down the court down the street, but, I mean, these are guys that have been playing for the better part of 15 years in their on their life and are just below pro-am. I mean, the numbers are staggering. And so it doesn't shock me that there would be this huge amount of people publicly in webcomics that will never make it, because that's true with any pursuit in life that's worth having. I really think that the depressing thing, like Scott said, is that it's all public, and that's what makes it, it's the exact word you use, transparency. That's what makes it seem dispiriting. But the fact is, it has always been an impossible road to walk down. You know, this has never been an easy thing to do. But what's interesting now, though, and this is a point that I made in Ohio State, is that it used to be a digital state of things. You made no money, bam, suddenly you had an income. And now it's this slow exponential curve, which I think is actually a more natural state of affairs, where you can have somebody who is a hobbyist or somebody who is a pro-am or somebody who is a part-timer making a sum that's equivalent to the time that they're putting into it or their skill level, you know?
Well, and that's the other thing I said as a response to this person that was asking me for quotes for this paper. With all of that being the case, I still think that I would rather be an independent cartoonist who is using the web for distribution over any other kind of cartoonist, because if I'm a print cartoonist or if I'm at the behest of any other kind of publisher, any number of things can come in, and that I can be let go, fired, or dismissed for any number of reasons. From a new editor comes in and doesn't like my stuff, to any number of other forces outside of my control. Whereas, as an independent guy working on the web, I keep all my own IP. I keep all the rights to all. If I'm smart, I'm keeping all the rights that I'm earning along the way. And when I'm done with all of this, I've got a number of books that I can publish into perpetuity, repackage and reoffer. And I don't know. None of it is. Listen, no sane person goes into this occupation. I mean, sane people become doctors and lawyers and electricians and plumbers. But if you're going to do this, it's my opinion that this gives you the greatest amount of security, the little bit that it is, into the long term.
I think that it's kind of like the Jurassic Park thing, too, with Jeff Goldblum's character. You know, they're so busy asking, can we do it? No one is asking, should we do it? And as people who have, since, you know, kids wanted to be cartoonists and grew up through syndication and comic books and graphic novels, and now we're of the age where we really want to make a go of this, and we stumbled onto webcomics, we talk about it a lot. And when you know, Brad, you know as well as I do, when someone aspiring asks you a question, and you can tell just by the way they're phrasing the question or the tone of their voice, they're asking for a magic bullet.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, there's no point in even answering, because they're looking for something magical, and there is nothing magical. So no answer you give them is going to work, because if they say, hey, how do I get a lot of readers? And you say, well, you know, there's not a real clear way to do it. Anything you say is a suggestion. They're going to run away with this. Okay, that's going to work for me. And then when it's not, I'll be devastated. But that's got to work. And, you know, the question that a lot of cartoonists should ask themselves first is, am I ready? Is it time? Mm-hmm. And if not, they should just keep working at it. And maybe they'll never be ready. But that's the problem, is that there's one of the things we've lost with this lack of a barrier of entry is we've lost a position or a person who is politically and social, political, so, help me, Chris, what's the word?
Societally?
Societally accepted to say, you're not talented enough. If it was an editor, okay, if an editor looked at your work and said, kid, you do not have what it takes, don't waste my time, it was okay. No one wanted his head. No one came with pitchforks and outrage. Because he's in a business, and if he lets someone through who's not good enough, he's going to be fired.
Right.
But now that that position is becoming more and more irrelevant.
Yeah, but now the marketplace is that person.
Maybe the marketplace is that person, but the marketplace is very fickle and finicky, and it's not a very accurate portrayal. I mean, look, I'm going to give an example that surprised the hell out of me recently. For a while, I would say, what, like 6 months to a year ago, Chris Onstad was a media darling.
Mm-hmm.
You would think that Akewood was the end-all, be-all of webcomics. I mean, it was talked about everywhere.
He was on the Time Top 10 list of best comics ever. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I haven't heard about him in a while, and so I went to check on his website, and he's got a fundraiser. He is asking for donations to keep his servers up. He says he doesn't like begging, but when it comes down to be this desperate, pride goes out the window.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, that's sort of the flip argument that I think we should – that's an interesting counterweight to Brad's point is that, like, I think what we were talking about at first is sort of the classic guilt that any art professor feels, right? Because, Scott, you and I talked to, like, Ray and Sweetwater and stuff at SCAD about this is that, you know, we sort of asked, like – because you can tell when you visit an art school – these four will succeed. These other 25 will not succeed. You know, you can tell right away. And so I think I was talking to Sweetwater or Ray or some one of the professors, and I said, do you guys ever feel like guilt in the fact that you're teaching, you're taking the money of these students and teaching them art, knowing that they'll never do anything? And I think it was Sweetwater that said, like, you don't know. All you can do as a professor is the best you can do is to give all the information you have, basically provide them with everything they will need, and then trust that they are on their own path. And he said the encouraging thing is that, you know, the majority of these people will never go into art. But this art instruction, you have no idea how it will ripple out into their life. You know,
No, that's true.
And some people, it might take them 20 years in the same way that it took – you know, Colonel Sanders 50 years to establish a successful business. You never know when it's going to click for somebody.
And we all look at him as the standard for success.
I think sometimes we feel this guilt of, like, you know, all these people at shows and through email come up to us because of the book we wrote and said, like, can I make this? Is this possible? And we're like, I don't know. God, I don't think so. And I think that's the classic guilt of any art professor that's, you know, that's had to do this because – we don't know someone's whole journey in their art life. And more importantly, we don't know if they have that gumption that's like, I don't care if I'm ready or not now, but I'm going to work my ass off for the next 15 years and I will be ready eventually.
Well, what does that say when somebody reaches the very pinnacle of success and then is asking for absolute outright donations?
That's the flip side, Brad, that I think is more interesting is that in the last couple of weeks, we've had quiet conversations that I think you guys have been privy to where people that I think are just immensely talented and at their top of their game with webcomics. And then they're like, guys, I don't know if I can make a go of this. And you're like, what? Really? You can't.
Or how can this be?
Yeah. Right. Well, like that's the part that scares me a little bit.
Don't let that scare you, Dave. I'll tell you why. Cause this is leading into another conversation I want to have. Cause there's something else happening in webcomics right now that I've seen before. You know, like Nicodemus in The Secret of Nim. I've seen this pattern before. Children gather round because in the third war. But there is something really interesting happening in webcomics right now. And there's this weird split, okay, between the sellouts and the artists. Now, Chris Onstad may be asking for donations now. Because the dumbass never put Google ads on his website. Now, that is going to sound really mean. He's got no ads on his site.
None?
He's never had ads on his site.
Okay.
And the thing to me is, and I come from a school of thought where if you don't put at least Google Ads on your website that you're trying to generate money from, you're committing suicide. Maybe not right now. Maybe you took the slow acting poison, you know? But, like, I don't understand why you wouldn't do everything possible, explore every avenue. But why not? Why not ads? Well, they make my site look ugly, you know?
Yeah,
okay.
There's a degree of, well, I'm sorry, but, you know, you have to do this stuff. I think that there is a the thing that you – so you become successful. You find – or you find popularity, which you can monetize, which you can act on. Mm-hmm. And you're on top of the world. And then – but after that, there is a – you know, it. I don't know that it – it's become as short-term as every other type of career out there where – you know, your parents could work at a job for 30 years and then draw a pension. But, you know, you or their kids or whoever, now they can only work at someplace for 5 years before they got to find another job. I think that people find this popularity and then they just kind of do the same thing over and over again. And they don't think about how to grow beyond that. And it's right. not – it's sufficient. And I wonder if that happened with Akewood, for example, where he's got his model that works. I know he puts books out. I know that he has a – asset bar, and I also know that he doesn't put ads on his site, probably for aesthetic purposes. Nobody likes to look at ads, but that, you know, ads are a crucial part of my income, and I don't like them either, but I absolutely need advertising.
If nothing else, even if you're not making any money off of them, when you're getting that much traffic, let Google index you that way, you know? Like,
yeah.
Think about the years of indexing that anyone in his position has missed out on. As dumb as that sounds, it sounds very SEO ridiculousness. But I've had Google Ads on my site for a long time, and people have said, Google Ads aren't paying off for me right now. And my thought was, look, Google's going to be around for the long run. I don't understand how this algorithm works, but let me let it get enough data. And all of a sudden, one day, I remember, Chris, I was telling you about it. 1 month, my Google revenue just clicked over.
Yeah, that happened to me just not too long ago. But it's like
all of a sudden, the ads on my site from Google were not, you know, snork tees and, well, how do you get rid of this roll of belly fat? But it was like for the Scott Pilgrim DVD. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
And it's because enough data has been gathered to somehow, I don't know, maybe it's kicked me up on a list. Maybe it's the right demographic.
Well, like, it understands your audience now.
Yeah, right, like, it right. just needed enough time. And so, I mean, it seems to me like, I don't know, and I it's a feeling I get, and I don't want to piss anybody off, but at the same time, I don't like this feeling that I'm not allowed to express what I feel for the fear that, you know, it's going to set someone's panties on fire. Now I sound like my dad groping for horrible metaphors.
I don't want the barn to fire. What?
Yeah. I don't want to feel like I can't say what I think and everyone's panties are going to twist and I don't give a shit. But from day one with PvP, it's been this this horrible, gut-wrenching, heart-in-my-throat race to find what is going to, okay, this is really good. This is bringing in a lot of money. And maybe it's my anxiety. But if Google Ads does really well for me, I don't think, oh, made it. I panic. Like, oh, shit. When is this going to be?
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. God, I always have that thought. Like, I have to be careful, but it fails, yeah.
Right, like, and so I better find something else, you know, because there was a time when the only income PvP generated was from UGO. It was just this money that came in, and I didn't do shit. And all of a sudden, one day, it was like, you know, that money's going to go away. It's just venture capital, and when they're out of it, the whole thing's going to crash. And then from that day on till now, every time I see something doing well, I panic.
Mm-hmm.
Because what if I'm relying too much on it? I better get something else going.
Yep.
You know, more legs under this table. Yep. I want a table with so many legs that it is a cube.
Right.
But there's a very odd, I don't know, maybe I'm the only one feeling it, but there's this very odd schism happening where it's very dangerous too, where it happened in alternative comics in the 90s, and it was that anyone doing well is a sellout, is contributing to the homogenization of comics. And a lot of excuses are made, and a lot of justifications are made as for why this person is succeeding. And then a lot of other justifications are made, and exceptions are made, for why this group of pure artists are not succeeding, or maybe are succeeding in the better way, or what is a measure of success. And the bottom line is, and that sounds like my dad again, the bottom line is that the measure of success will always be for everyone across the board, whether or not they get to keep doing it. Because nothing's ever going to change with the base economics in this country. You're going to have to make a living to put food on your table and a roof over your head. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and there's always going to be a finite amount of time in your day. So we can argue all we want about what level of success or what measuring stick you want for success, but earning money is always going to win, in my opinion.
No, and you know what? I'm so glad to hear you say that, because I in the past have felt very mercenary when I said this sort of thing, but really, money is the only way you can describe success in your career. Because, or rather, it's the only way. And we have a chat that we have with other cartoonists every once in a while. And I said to the other day that I recognize that because I never went the publisher route, that I have stepped away from certain things. And one of the things is all the major awards of any system, whether it's the Rubens, whether it's the Harveys, whether it's the Eisners, are essentially publisher-organized awards, right? Like, if you are associated with a publisher, you stand a 90% better chance than someone who's not associated with a publisher. Mm-hmm. So by Sheldon never going that route, I will – and you could argue on quality anyway, but Sheldon will never win an award like that. But you know what? I don't give a shit, because I will make a living for 20 years more than some of the guys that have won that award, simply because I have not gone the publisher route and that I own everything that I create, you know?
Yeah, yeah. You want that.
And that's why, like, the short-term egotistical boost that every artist needs, myself included, of like, oh, yay, I'm validated. I'm here. I'm respected by my peers. I don't give a shit. I'd rather pay my mortgage now. And I know that sounds curmudgeonly, and I know that sounds mercenary, but I do not care. I don't care
about
other people.
David. It's not curmudgeonly. And Scott, you linked to a great article, and maybe we could put it up in the blog feed for Webcomics Weekly, that talks about why give it away and pray is not a business model.
But yes.
But it doesn't mean that does not work. And I thought it was a great article. And, I mean, it basically summarizes that, the idea that, I mean, I don't think it's wrong to be putting forth an effort that you expect to be paid for. No. And you can get mired in a lot of the politics of, you know, as much of a shame as it is, because I think that the webcomics community, quote unquote, like, everybody has a different definition of what that community is. But I remember when I was starting out, I would get hung up on, you know, not necessarily making better work or finding different audience streams, you know, and trying to differ myself. But I would worry about whether or not I was in the top 5 of the top 100 webcomics list, or whether or not I'd be able to win XYZ GeoCities award this year, which, you know, is enjoyed by all of 25 people. And those things do not make any difference in the long run. And it feels good. It feels like you've gotten identified. It feels like you've been recognized. But then you turn around and you're like, okay, rent is due. What do I do? This award doesn't give me anything at all.
Right. And the extension to that is, and I swear to God, I'm serious about this. The extension to that award mentality is, oh, hooray, I'm finally with a publisher. Because every time this happens with a web cartoonist, I swear to God, I go, well, I'll talk to you again in 2 years. Because it's not going to have worked out.
Exactly.
And you're going to be sitting on a lot of pulp books from a publisher and you're going, well, that was a wasted 2 years. Every time one of our associates or friends is like, yep, I'm with Dark Horse, yep, I'm with Fantagraphics, yep, I'm with Del Rey, or yep, I'm with Scholastic or whatever, I'm like, all right, I'm going to talk to you again in 2 years. Congratulations on what you're feeling right now, because in 2 years you're going to be like, buh, you know?
And Dave, even me, who is with the most hands-off publisher in the world, essentially a boutique publisher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Image is awesome.
And especially the artists, yeah.
Yeah, even with them, every once in a while, we were like, blah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's with as good as it gets. Image is as good as it gets for being able to just, I mean, with Image, you can throw your hands up and say, fuck it, I'm out. And they're like, all right, see you later. And then I'm like, no, I changed my mind. They're like, all right, you can come back. I mean, Image really is, they're there to provide an artist they think is worthy of the time. If they like your stuff, if you pass editorial muster, you can just do what you want there,
right.
Essentially. Right. And even with that, there's some pitfalls. But to what you said, David, as someone who has been honored and is very appreciative of both an Eisner win and a Harvey win, the conversion rate on that to any kind of money is two rat's dicks to a cow ass. It means nothing.
Right. Now, is that another one of your dad's?
No, that's mine. But I have to come into my own at some point.
No, but Scott,
I have to have my dad hear that and go, I'm proud of you, son.
It sounds like a down home, like a barn, you know. That'll get you two rat sticks to the cow's ass.
It's some Oklahomaism, yeah. But Scott, yeah. it's far more powerful for the public to hear that from you than from me, because I've said that to people and they're like, well, you just wish you had an award. It's like, no, does nothing
for
your
career. No, listen, I've been nominated for a Harvey 4 times, and I've won once, and it has done less. The nominations and the win have done less for my income and less for my standing in the industry than hosting the Harveys has done for me.
Yeah,
being asked to host the Harveys has done more for my standing in the comic book industry than winning an Eisner.
Right.
Yeah, and it's not that, and we have, let's be clear, because I'm wondering if some people will take away the wrong message. It's not that you are not honored to be nominated to win.
Oh,
you
no,
are.
I wanted it. I would have scratched a bitch's eyes out to get to the Harvey.
But you can't, but having said that, and having said even that, you can't spin around and say, ah, I won the Harvey. Now where's my golden ticket?
Listen to this. This is how petty I am. I was nominated for an Eisner for Best Humor Comic, and I won for Best Digital. And every time I look at my Best Digital Eisner, I go, wasn't Best Comic, though. Because I feel like Best Digital was like someone going, you got to give Kurtz. PvP was like the grandfather. Right? In fact, I know that's what happened, because I did not to be nominated for an Eisner for Digital Comic, you have to nominate yourself. There's no publisher to nominate you. So you have to submit yourself for that award, and I did not. And so when I won it, I asked Jackie, how the hell did I get nominated for this? And they're like, well, the judges were sitting around going, why isn't Kurtz won this yet?
Yeah.
And they're like, no. And Jackie said, because he won't nominate himself. And they're like, no, bullshit. We'll nominate him.
It's like winning the List Man Award.
Yeah. So I look at it, and I'm like, well, they gave it to me. They felt like I, you know, it didn't make sense not to give me one. But the one I wanted was for Best Humor in Comics, because that was the competition. And Kyle Baker beat me, and I will kill that man one day for beating me for that. I wanted it so bad. And so it's sitting there. There's an Eisner on my goddamn shelf, and I'm looking at it and going, not the one I wanted. But having said that, even if I got the one I wanted, it's nothing but a personal accomplishment. That's what it's about. And like Chris, you know Pomplamoose, that two person independent band we really love, really love.
Yeah, I love. She's my girlfriend because she stares at me and sings to me.
They're awesome. You guys should look them up on YouTube. They're a group called Pomplamoose. They're two people essentially in their garage and their attic making music, and they're very talented. Well, they're featured on new Hyundai commercials. It's just the two of them in their garage with a brand new Hyundai singing Christmas music. And I know that there's a lot of people in webcomics that might look at that and go, well, they made it. Like, they got their Hyundai commercial, so they're like, done. All right, let's spend the money. But that is just every little accomplishment like that, even something as big as being in a national commercial for Hyundai, that doesn't mean they've made anything.
No.
Right.
The people for Hyundai were there for 2 days filming. They got some money, and now they've got to find another way to make money next
month. Well, that's just what success is, though. Success is using your small successes to build to a bigger success. And right. there is no final success. In other words, this isn't a quest where when you reach the grail, you know, the clouds part and the sun shines. Every success you build, it's like being asked on the Letterman show. You'd be asked, and he would announce you, and he'd say, you remember this band? They were on the Hyundai commercial. And everybody cheers, and they think, hey, this is great, because we parlayed the Hyundai commercial into getting onto the Letterman show. And now that I've been on the Letterman show, it's time to, maybe I can go to the Today Show and say, hey, you know what? I was on the Letterman show. Maybe I, and then next thing you know, Matt Lauer is on in the morning saying, as you saw on the Letterman show, here's the, and you just keep building and building success, but there is no final success. You just use the success before to hopefully get you to the next success.
Well, let me ask you guys this, as three other people who, get to do this for a living for the most part. What is your ultimate goal ultimately when you break it down, when you just start ripping away like you're husking a ear of corn, everything superfluous.
Tuck into that tamale.
Well, yeah, okay, tamale. when you're pulling away all that, the core of what you want is please let me get to do this again another year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So success for me is that 10 years from now I still get to keep doing this, something like this. Maybe it's not PvP. Maybe PvP's still there, but like, you know, this podcast or the Blams or the news strip I'm doing, the Trenches we're going to be doing next year. All these things are desperate attempts to keep this going another year.
Yes.
You know, to diversify and broaden. And that there's no... that's the success. Like, the two people I've seen that really succeeded at cartooning was Alex Toth and Charles Schultz.
Mm-hmm.
They found Toth dead at his drawing table. Success. Yeah. He won.
Yes. You are not the only person to feel this way.
Yeah. He no longer has to worry about, will he get to do this until he dies? Yes. He won. Charles Schultz, they told Charles Schultz, you can't draw anymore. You just can't keep up with the schedule because, you know, you need to rest. And he's like, no, I'll just die. And last strip comes out, dead.
As the strips are hitting the – and Johnny Hart, although I wasn't as much of a fan of his work, Johnny Hart was the same way, died at his drawing desk. And that's – I mean, you ask what the biggest fear is. The biggest fear is not necessarily – going bankrupt, although since my wife listens to the podcast, that is a fear that keeps me motivated. but my biggest fear is not going bankrupt. My biggest fear in the world is something happening, an aneurysm, a stroke, losing my right hand for more than a couple reasons, and not being able to do my comic anymore. Right, yes! I mean, you can't do that with an aneurysm. You get it all screwed up. You're fondling your own knee. But
well, if you have Parkinson's, I bet it feels great.
You monster.
You know what, Brad, that for the longest time, I always said that was my greatest fear, that idea of losing my ability to draw. But I've since come to realize that, like, as much as I love cartooning, and I do love it, I want to do it until I'm like Scott said, I want to do it until I'm dead. Essentially, what we are, to some extent, is writers. So as a fallback, we could be writers if we had to.
Sure.
But it wouldn't be
It wouldn't be the same. I think if you can let that help diminish that fear, because I used to let that fear rule me, and I wouldn't do housework, and I wouldn't, you know, climb up on roofs or trees or anything. Not that I'm scrambling up on roofs and trees.
I never thought of using that as an excuse to get out of housework. Honey, I can't touch that vacuum cleaner, for crying out loud. Do you know what could happen?
Yeah. I mean, I one time canked my drawing arm between a monkey wrench and a pipe, and I was like, this is stupid. Why am I not letting a plumber do this? You know,
I can't do this. I've insured this hand for $2 million.
Yeah, it's like Mary Hart's legs, you know, that she's got.
So vacuum with your left. So vacuum with your left hand. My paper holding hand?
I can't let tape do that.
Like you're so offended. Like you don't acknowledge my left hand at all.
You don't
have the team.
You literally, it's like a teenager. You run out of the room crying with your head in your hands. You're like, you don't know my process. Here's the other thing, and
this sounds a little bit. You can openly sneer if I say this or say that I'm full of myself. But like right now, I'm at my drawing desk and I'm looking at the stuff that I'm doing this week and the stuff I did last week. And I think I tweeted about this. I went into an inking trance, listening, by the way, to an audiobook of Outliers. So now, if we can go back to 2008, I can join in the conversation we were having during the podcast about that book. The work I'm doing now, I am so ridiculously proud of. It's stuff that I couldn't have done in 2002 if you would have put a gun to my head. And I guess part of me wants to keep doing this to see where I'm at 5 years from now and 10 years from now. I mean, there's so much more for me to do. There's so much better for me to get. And I want to be there when it happens. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. You're in a good place, essentially, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
No, that's great, Brad. The
sneer.
Where before, when we first started talking about this, I said, this makes me worried. And Scott said, no, it should make you worried. But I want to go back to that point, because here's where it makes me worried, is that we often tell people that, look, if you just learn your business and if you work on your – basically, we say, become a good artist, become a good businessman. Essentially, it will eventually work, right? Or for a percentage of you, it will eventually work. But what makes me despair a little bit, though, is that Sheldon is not a big strip by any stretch of metrics, right? It's not. I think all four of you probably, or all three of you, beat me, but as far as metrics goes. But I make a living at it. So where I despair is these artists that are 5, 10, sometimes 20 times larger than Sheldon that can't seem to make a living from it. And that's where I despair, because it's like, really? You haven't learned enough to make a living off of that? Like that, you have a huge strip, blankety blank.
Well, because those numbers don't mean so much anymore. I mean, it used to be the more traffic, the more money. And my traffic is lower than it's been at its height. I think that a combination of better analytics, I think analytics have gotten more accurate. And the fact that there's just more out there to read means that PvP's traffic is lower than it once was at its height. And I don't think that its traffic at that height, we'll make an air quotes, was accurate. Right, because I don't think that analytics were as accurate. So when you look at my numbers now, and I think PvP's got like, I don't know, like what did Jeff say the other day, Chris? 9 million page views?
No, it's higher.
9 to 11?
Yeah.
No, it's 11. 11 million page views. My first thought was, God, I remember one time when my analytics told me 18. And I was talking about that with Robert, and I'm like, God, what's happened? Like, I've dropped down to half of what my page views were, and he's like, no, analytics weren't good. We're not as good back then. They don't report the things the way that they used to report them. You didn't have 18 back then either. So I know it's down from what it was once, but that is not a statistic that is affecting anything. So even if I focused on that, like, no, got to get my page views up, I don't know that it would make my life any better. I don't think it would make my income any better.
No. But I guess what I'm trying to say, though, is that for all intents and purposes, the cartoonists that we would refer to in this conversation as having done it, like they went through all the hoops of quality work and essentially learning the right business techniques, where I despair for them is like, no, you have 3 to 4 million page views a month. You should be able to make this work. And they're not making it work. And that's – I despair for those people.
Well, here's what's interesting about that. I mean, taking the Chris Onstad example, let's say you're a hypothetical Chris Onstad and you've done the plea for donations and you succeed. And you get enough donations to get you through January 31st, 2011.
Okay.
What's the first and that happens? That happens at the on November 30th. This happens of 2010. You succeed in your donations drive. What's the first thing you do on December 1st?
You start a new drive.
You go drinking.
I'm being serious because this is what bothers me is that a donation drive is a short-term solution to what is a long-term problem.
Well, I think it has to do with, like, reinvesting in what you've got. Like, you can't say, all right, I got $5,000, and that's rent and utilities and savings to spare. Well, you got to turn some of that into a new product that's going to bring you another, you know.
Well, that's just it, because the answer is not as simple as, okay, I'm going to start running ads on my site.
No, that's not. Well,
you're right. No, it's also it's probably a larger picture of changing your mindset about how you run your business. Is that where you're getting that, Brad? I mean,
well, I don't know. I'm actually asking the question because I'm not sure I know what the answer is.
Well, okay. Then answering it in that regard, that's why I was despairing, because if some of these cartoonists can't make it work with those kind of numbers, I don't know how to fix it for them. You know.
Well, the thing is that I don't want to feel a lot of guilt over that. Like I truly believe that they should be able to do that. I mean, because they are amazing, these people. And I don't understand where the disconnect is. However, you know, if you ask me point blank, okay, well, what would you have done differently, genius? I'm not sure. You know, I don't know what new product to make or how many ads, you know, because it might be, I've always felt that StarSlip is very strange in that I make the vast majority of my income from advertising. And it's not a page view heavy strip.
Right, like, now you do. But if StarSlip has staying power, that'll change. I mean,
yeah. It definitely will change.
Yeah. So I mean, the thing is, guys, the bottom line is nobody knows. Like, I ask all the time, why the hell is PvP still around? Like, what makes PvP something that's stuck around for 13 years and doesn't seem to be going anywhere, but something like Krist Onstad, now we're scared that it might be something that's finite. You know, Akewood is not maintaining enough interest to keep it afloat. What's so special about PvP? I don't get it. Like, I personally don't see it. And someone that makes a strip and loves doing it, you'd think I'd be biased and be like, well, I'm shitting gold. That's why it's still around. But honestly, like, I look at XKCD. How long is that going to be around? Like, will XKCD be have a finite arc? You know? I mean, and I say, I can say, well, you know, PvP has evolved. It started out as a gaming comic. I was at lunch the other day, and I asked Mike and Jerry, what was the first gaming comic? And they go, you were. And I said, no, certainly someone before me. And they're like, no, it was you. You predated us by like 6 months. It was you. Mm. You were the first gaming comic. And I'm like, I'm going to start fucking using that on my, like, the first gaming comic. But
I thought of a funny tagline for that, Scott. It should be,
what is it?
The first gaming comic after yours. Because you were the first to succeed, but there was 10 million others that were like, well, I could do that too. I get jokes about Mega Man.
Oh, people that never survived. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. Like, everybody's had a gaming comic.
Right, but they're saying PvP was the first, but it's certainly not that anymore. And I don't think Penny Arcade is necessarily just that anymore. And so I think, okay, well, the strips that have evolved and changed, people are conscious of that. They want their art to change. They want their humor to change. They want maybe the direction to change, even though the brand has stayed the same. Okay, well, but what about Sluggy Freelance and User Friendly? They have not changed at all. Mm-hmm. Like, User Friendly, if you were to go look at that site, you would think you've gone through your browser to a time machine, mm-hmm, back to 1998. And he's still going around. He's still going. I mean, who knows how well he's doing, but that can't be it. So I don't know what it is. I mean, maybe it's that the people become invested in the creator and not necessarily the strip.
Well, that
and
goes back to something that we talked about a little bit last week, too, in that, like we were saying, that maybe this is something that I've been thinking about a lot, again, for a post for webcomics.com. If you were suggesting a domain for somebody who's starting out, and you had a choice between telling him to get the domain that really fits the comic he's working on or to get his full name, which would you get? Which suggestion would you have?
Probably his full name at this point.
Unless he's a really long Polish name. I would vote this.
Well, yeah, if he had a ridiculous spelling. Yeah. But I that's another thought that I had. That if I was starting out, I might want to center everything along Geiger.com other than evil-comic.com and courting-disaster.com, because what's going to happen over the course of everyone's careers, it's going to be more the creator than it is the title. The titles are going to come and go, but it's going to be the creator that everything gets built around. And for people like Chris and Scott, certainly, and no, you can have that. And for people like, even to an extent like Dave and me, the name recognition is going to be what carries the career, not so much one particular title.
Yeah, I agree. And I've started to link to my personal site, not outright like, hey, come look at this, but just so that it's present. Mm-hmm. Just so that it's something additional for people to potentially.
Right. Well, Chris, you're having this problem right now, right? Because when someone is going to link you, when you know you got a big link coming, like Penny Arcade or something, and you're like, God, I don't know what site to tell them to link to.
Right, I don't know which one's going to do the best. Like, I guess Chainsaw Suit, but that's not the entirety, and I don't know what to. I figure as long as I'm sending them to one of them.
I don't know if Dave has seen this yet, but in December we're launching a new site for PvP, and it really focuses on the site is really focused on featuring everything I'm doing right now, because by the time January 1 rolls around, I will be working on three major projects. What's up? Recording webcomics, The Weekly.
Wondering how your options are doing.
Well, that's a good question. I'll edit this out. It is up to $787. Yeah.
Yes.
But I will be working on three pretty big projects: PvP, Blamimations, which are doing amazing, and I'm starting a new strip with Penny Arcade called The Trenches. Well, right now my website is really good at featuring the day's strip, kind of okay at featuring what I'm writing about in the blog, and nothing else is it's good at.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's in the store? Who knows? Is there a store? I don't know. I mean, like, the site is very good at featuring the comic strip, and that's it. And I just have too much going on now. And I have all this traffic and people who come to my site, and they're just not aware of what all is going on in my creative life, necessarily. That audience is fragmented. The people that know about Blams know about Blams. People that know about PvP know about PvP. The people that care are scrolling down and reading what's in my blog. I want everyone that comes to the site,
believe it or
to
not,
see at a glance.
I had this exact conversation with David Malky last night about how what he's done is he's got a brand where he can put catch-all under that. And Wonder Mark is essentially him. And I know that
it's really good.
It speaks to a certain aesthetic that maybe he doesn't want to employ the whole time, but it is broad enough that you can say he can put out a Wonder Mark book of, you know, of prose, of stories, which he has,
mm-hmm.
and they're absurd. I mean, it's the same line of humor, but it is not Wonder Mark specific, but it is for the same audience, and it is him, and he can do that. I feel a lot more uncomfortable saying, you know, like some book that I write and then calling it a Chris Straub book. You know, like that's a brand. I don't like that. I wish I had a name to place on things.
Yeah, right,
well, that's right, a good point.
Wonder Mark is a really, really classy brand.
That's Chris. That's when you dust off Airsick Moth. That's what you do.
Did you? Know
I've actually always loved Nightlight Press.
Yeah,
I really love that logo. It's
kind of stodgy, though. Somebody asked me if you ever had a publishing house, what would you call it? I'm like, well, I already kind of do call it something. That's how insignificant it is, which is fine.
Dave, but, take a look at Skype. I sent you a link
okay.
to the site.
I've got to look at the computer again. Hold on here.
Oh.
Where am I?
Yeah, no, it's...
You're like, I'm in the bedroom right now. I'm recording this from prone. I'm in my pajamas. I need to get up and look at a computer.
I think that what's really exciting and what's really interesting about everything that's happening right now online is that independent media is having a renaissance, and I'm really excited to be a part of it. I'm really excited to be around when it's happening. I can't tell you how many times I've encountered people that say, I just feel like I was born in the wrong time, you know. And Brad, you just read this Outliers book, and it was depressing to think that the really exciting time for creators had passed with the dot-com boom and everything. And I always tell people, I can't tell you how to do what I did, because there will never be a dot-com boom again for you to try to replicate what I did.
Mm-hmm.
But there is really exciting stuff happening in independent media right now. And now more than ever, people with the talent and the drive have more options to go it on their own and really build a long-lasting career for themselves than they ever have before.
Without a doubt. I've said that tons of times. There's never been a better time to be an independent creator. And I'll go even one step further. It's never been more important to be an independent creator than it is now.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you have Leo Laporte, who essentially got fired from Tech TV and started his own Tech TV Online.
Yeah.
Right? I'm sure that business is generating millions a year. He's paying staff. You have my friend Gary, who is experiencing the same problems we're experiencing with paid travel writers as he's traveling the world, being an independent travel blogger, you know. And you'd be surprised at how cheap it is for him to travel, because a lot of the places that he's going to, travel bureaus and of those places are paying him and putting him up in 4-star hotels to come and blog about what it's like there.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. So, I mean, you know, Jonathan Coulton making music, Gary traveling, doing travel writing, Leo Laporte doing tech television, us with cartooning.
Right.
It's just a really exciting time to be involved in all of it.
Well, and I think to Brad's point, the counterpoint to that is that if you are with a major, whatever you want to call it, recording studio, publishing house, media distributor, you're a little bit effed right now. I mean, they're all, in some regards, trying to figure it out. And the nice thing about being independent is the nimbleness, you know?
Mm-hmm. They're in a transition period. Yeah. I think they will figure it out.
I'm not saying that they're gone for good, not by any means. In fact, I think we're about to start seeing a recoalescing through stuff like the iPad. But I think we have a nimbleness that will survive us through a couple different, if we're good about it, will survive us through a couple different platform changes, you know?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, and I really think, and I'll put it in the show notes, but you guys really should read this article at Tech Dirt, where this guy kind of dismantles the whining of Colleen Duran about piracy, and another article about how, like Chris was saying, giving things away for free is not the same way as giving away what's infinite and selling what is scarce. Mm-hmm. And I really think this is going to come up again and again in 2011, especially for people that are listening to this because you are involved in comics. You are giving away what is infinite because the market is going to determine that is free anyway, and you're selling the scarce. And if you aren't making the part of your business that is the scarce part of your business, then you're not completing the business model.
And there's that word scarcity again. I think we're going to hear that a lot in the coming year.
Yeah, I think that's going to be the key word for 2011.
Well, I'll tell you what, then maybe this is a good place to leave it.
You know what?
We should go around the table now. We should go around the table and say what we're thankful for, and then I think we can eat.
Okay.
I can tell you what Max said in the car this morning.
I read that. I read it.
Greatness. It is so good. I called my wife and told her.
Max said with his chirpy little four-year-old voice from the back seat, Alex says, are we going to tomorrow say what we're thankful for before we eat? And Max goes, I'm thankful for all the greatness I bring to the world. And I
That's
said,
the best
no, day. So am I.
It's amazing. What are you thankful for, Brad?
I'm looking at them. They're here in my studio, and I'm listening to them. They're here on the podcast.
Aww. Wow.
And one more, and this isn't in no particular order. I'm also very thankful for the one that is at home in bed right now listening to this podcast as she floats off to sleep. Hopefully she made it this far because she makes – all those other things very possible and very enjoyable.
Ugh. Wow.
Brad, all right. Why didn't well, you say I was, last?
Go ahead. Try to beat that, you mooks.
Great. I was going to say I'm thankful
because Brad,
for nacho cheese
Doritos, I got these new driving gloves,
you.
And I thought those were pretty nice. But
exactly. I had some joke. I'm sure Scott, it's like, I'm thankful for my ads this year.
No, listen, I am still thankful for nacho cheese Doritos, and I am not going to back out.
Right, and I think it's just as valid, if not more so, what Brad said, because more people can enjoy Doritos than can enjoy Brad's family. So if you think about it, Doritos.
Yeah, I'll go next. I'm thankful for our listeners.
Aww.
Curses foiled again.
I don't care about my stupid wife. I care about you guys.
Well, honestly, I am grateful to be doing this show again. It feels right. It feels like
it feels really strong.
Needed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Strong is right word.
Nobody likes it. Like, everybody's like, Chris, we're only doing this because you asked us whether or not.
Dave just goes, yeah.
It's like the one kid that wants friends so bad. Like, this feels great, guys. This feels like the best ever. And then just silence. Like, yeah, we're all like,
we all agreed to go camping because that's what we have the equipment for. Nobody likes camping, but.
See, the way I imagined it, we were like at your birthday party and we're all quietly finishing up our ice cream and you're like, this is the best, isn't it, guys? Thanks, guys. You guys are the best. And we're like slowly circling our ice cream bowls. Yeah, that's pretty good.
It is okay. The ice cream's good.
It's not the worst. It's not the worst.
All right. Dave, what are you thankful for? And then we'll go.
Oh, can I tell you, I'm the most optimistic that I've been in 3 or 4 years about my career, and I'm very thankful for that. Well, Brad knows this. When you have a kid, you lose time. You lose a lot of time. And I have been short on sleep for the last 2.5, 3 years. Like, I've really lost a lot of sleep, and my business has suffered as a result. But my old assistant, who I've had for a year and a half, just got a job with NPR, and so she left. And I was really sad about that because I thought, that was a huge help to my business. And then I ended up finding a new assistant that I love and ended up hiring her full time. And I'm super excited about what that's going to do for time for me. And I am so optimistic about this, about having time again.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm super excited about that.
Well, remember, guys, remember everyone listening. Whatever goes down in the next couple of years, I really do feel there's going to be a rift. There's going to be a rift in a cottage industry that builds around a bunch of hippie assholes patting themselves on the back because they are writing the really awesome comics about their life on the mean streets of fucking Plano, Texas. And your comic strip about gaming is selling out. And here's the bottom line. Money can't buy happiness, but it can buy time
yes.
to do what you love.
Yeah. No, but that gives me direct relation to my family. So,
yeah.
You
earn your money and you try to develop that staying power and it'll be a good 2011.
Words to live by.
And beyond.
So speaking of family, I should go get to mine. So thank you guys.
Yeah, me too.
This is great.
Happy Turkey Day, boys.
Happy Thanksgiving, fellas.
All right, see you guys.
Bye-bye.